Welcome to Vocal Point. This is Jerry Newcomb. Right now, Bill Saraceno joins us. He's with something called the 2016 Committee. In fact, he's the national director. We're going to talk about the election, the upcoming 2016 election, and specifically the example of Ben Carson, who, even though he's not a professional politician, is getting a lot of attraction or a lot of traction in this particular contest, which is interesting. Maybe 2016 will be the year of the non-professional politician, perhaps. Bill, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much. And the 2016 committee is the independent expenditure committee, or super PAC in a vernacular, that's supporting Dr. Carson. We had been the draft Ben Carson for president committee. Since there's no longer a need for a draft, we're now the super PAC supporting his candidacy. And I think you hit the nail right on the head, that the fact that he is a non-politician, has not held elective office. In fact, if you look at the top three finishers in surveys since the first debate, they are the three non-politicians in the Republican field: Carson, Trump, and Carly Fiorina are 1, 2, and 3 in most of the national polls and in all of the Iowa polls that have been done since the first debate. And the fact that they have not been part of the process, that is, I like to put it, Ben Carson's fingerprints are not on the train wreck in Washington, D.C., that's a large part of his appeal, we believe.
Okay, for those not familiar with Ben Carson, tell us about his biography. It's a very interesting background.
Well, it's a fascinating biography, and for those of your listeners who have not read his most biographical book called Gifted Hands, I would strongly urge them to find it at Amazon or Barnes & Noble and read Gifted Hands. He was born in Detroit. His father left shortly after he was born, raised by a single mother who worked as a cleaning lady and odd jobs. He was in trouble as a young man, and finally his mother sat he and his brother down and said, "Listen, this is going to stop. Here's what you two are going to do. You two are going to read a book a week, and you're going to write me a book report." She was illiterate, but they didn't know it. And they submitted their reports to her, and she would go through and make marks on it, and they believed that she was reading it. Anyway, Carson credits that to the start of his turnaround, and it was a dramatic turnaround. He joined ROTC in high school, was the top ROTC student in the entire state of Michigan. In fact, was offered an appointment to West Point, but by that time had decided he wanted to go into medicine, so that he did not take the appointment. But and he eventually went on, of course, to become the chief of neurosurgery at Johns Hopkins, one of the best hospitals in the world, a position he held for 30 years. And that it is an inspiring story that we believe particularly will resonate with folks who are having the same kinds of struggles. Ben Carson can go in and say, "Hey, I've been there, I've done that, I've lived it, and let me tell you the way out. Let me tell you my way out." And we think that'll be a powerful message.
Mm-hmm. But isn't it true, too, that sometimes if people don't have much political experience, they can get over their heads? I mean, for example, President Obama was basically a community organizer before he became a U.S. senator and then, of course, president.
Well, Jerry, I don't. The problem with President Obama is not that he's in over his head. His head is that he's an ultra-liberal. Jimmy Carter was literally a nuclear scientist, I believe, or he commanded nuclear submarines. And his problem was not that he was in over his head. It's just that he was pursuing the wrong policies. Ben Carson ran the neurosurgery department at Johns Hopkins, had several hundred employees, a multi-$100 million budget that he managed every year. He knows how to get things done. He knows how to manage, which is frankly what the president should do. And again, we think that, well, the Congress, as far as experience, the current members of Congress have 8,700 years of experience between
them.
And we don't see much result positive for the American people.
Positive. Yeah, I think the key word there is positive. Yeah. Wow. That's a great point. Now, Carson got a big bump from that first debate. Can you talk about that? Some people said it was really because of what he said at the end.
Well, it was, because he didn't get much face time, although in response to criticisms from a lot of the candidates that Fox focused too much on Trump, Fox released the number of questions that each candidate got, and actually Carson got 6, and I think Trump got 7. And so it wasn't the questions, it's just that they didn't have much substance to them. His closing statement, where he talked about in his doctor's bedside manner, in his kind Ronald Reagan-esque manner, about his vision for the country, was a home run. And the fact of the matter is, up to that point, and even now, he is still not known to a fairly significant minority of the Republican electorate. And our view all along had been that the more he becomes known, the better he will do in the polls. 24 million people watched that debate. Mm. Probably up to 10 million of them had never seen him before, had never heard him before, and they were impressed. And we think that is clearly what has resulted in his bump up in the polls since the first debate.
Mm. You know, it's interesting. In some ways, Ben Carson's introduction to politics, I suppose one could say, was when he spoke at the National Prayer Breakfast a couple of years ago and had the gumption to actually take President Obama to the woodshed, rightfully so, related to Obamacare. And, you know, as a medical doctor, Dr. Carson was saying what was best. You know, unfortunately, Obamacare is a terrible cure for the medical problems we have in this country.
Exactly right. And I think people that question, he's very soft-spoken, obviously, and we think part of the reason is that what you're seeing is a doctor's bedside manner. They are used to being calm and reassuring. They don't jump up, wave their arms and shout. But he showed at the prayer breakfast that he knows how to be tough when it's time to be tough. But again, it wasn't in a strident manner. He just went through and point by point took Obamacare apart with Mr. Obama sitting 2 seats away from him. And that shows his willingness to take on the issues that need to take on, the fact that he's not going to back down.
It seems to me when you have a black conservative, unfortunately, some of the most shrill groups out there against the black conservatives are the black liberals, who then turn around and, you know, call them traitors, Uncle Toms. So, you know, prior to Obama, for example, the most powerful black man in America was probably Clarence Thomas. But
correct.
The man, even to this day, is being totally vilified, and it's terrible what's happened to him, unjustly.
Absolutely. I think that and you're right, that certainly as Dr. Carson becomes more prominent and a more realistic potential nominee for the Republicans, that the professional race hustlers are going to start attacking him. But he won't back down. He goes straight to the lion's den. He did a walking tour of Harlem a couple of weeks ago. That was very successful because he goes around those people and just talks to the average person on the street. And the average person on the street, whatever their color is, understands that public schools are a mess, that education is the key to their children's success, that lack of discipline holds them back from being successful in the real world. And again, Carson can deliver that message from his own life directly to people who understand that he's telling the truth because they see it every day. So we're not. I expect that if he is the nominee, when he is the nominee, that he will make an aggressive play for not only the African American votes but Hispanic votes, and talking to them about the problem of poverty and the problem of lack of opportunity and the role that big government has in creating all those problems.
All right, right now we're talking with Bill Saraceno of the 2016 committee, and they're very excited about Ben Carson and the possibility of him being president. Is he actually tied with Donald Trump in some polls? Because I understand Trump is number 1. Then, well, I guess Carson is number 2, and then Carly Fiorino is number 3.
In the latest national polls I saw, sometime earlier this week, It was Trump and Carson pretty much bunched 1-2. And Carly was in third place, although a fair distance behind Carson. In Iowa, there was a poll done by Monmouth University, which I think is in New Jersey, and released on Monday or yesterday, that showed Carson and Trump in tied in Iowa at 23%. And so, yes, there's no mistake in the fact that he is surging at the moment and has a great deal of momentum, again, because of the first debate and the fact that people got a chance to see him and say, hey, you know what? This guy's the real thing. We need to consider him seriously as our nominee. But there was a poll earlier this week that showed he and Trump tied in Iowa.
This is an interesting phenomenon in terms of 2016. As I said at the very opening, the idea that people don't necessarily want just business as usual. I mean, even on the Democratic side of things, we see Bernie Sanders, who's not well known necessarily, hasn't been well known prior to this spring, let's say, and yet he is gaining on Hillary Clinton. It's a fascinating thing to see this, but again, it's people don't want business as usual, it seems.
Absolutely right. I mean, frankly, the political establishment of both parties has a hand in turning people sour on the establishment and business as usual. And they're absolutely right. Bernie Sanders is from Vermont. Who in the world had heard of him before he started running? And yes, he is gaining. And in fact, in a poll from New Hampshire a week or 10 days ago that I saw, he was ahead of Mrs. Clinton.
Wow.
Nationally, he is gaining on her. In Iowa, he is gaining on her. And it is a reaction not only to the obvious fact that Mrs. Clinton is truth challenged, but also to the point that you raise, that, you know what, it's the establishment, it's the same old thing. It's like Einstein's definition of insanity, is doing the same thing over and over, but expecting a different result. I think the American people have caught on to that, and they do not want to do the same thing over and over, at least when it comes to electing a president next year.
What are Ben Carson's thoughts when it comes to the immigration problem?
You know what? We, as an independent expenditure committee, we do not create policy for him. I can tell you what he has said publicly, and that is that the first order of business is securing the border. That before any other reform can make any sense, you have to stop the influx of illegals. And that would be his number one priority. And once we know, I think his thinking is that once we know that the borders are secure, then we could take a look at what, all right, knowing that there aren't going to be a significant number of new illegals added to what we have in the country, what do we have in the country and how's the best way to deal with them? Keeping in mind all the various factors that you would have to do in coming up with a intelligent immigration policy. But the first thing, first order of business, and I know I've heard him and read him saying this, is that you have to secure the borders, or else there's no, if you don't have secure borders, you really don't have a country.
Hmm. Where is Ben Carson coming from spiritually?
Oh, he's a very religious man. He has written 7 books, I think, and just about to come out with his eighth in October, called A More Perfect Union. He constantly prays. I think he prays before each speech. At the 2016 committee, we have a prayer conference call every Monday that anybody that wants to call in on can participate in. He is a very, very spiritual man, and he talks about, very frankly, how could he do what he has done, operating on people's brains, operating on children's brains, mm-hmm. Being the first man to separate Siamese twins, join at the head, how could he do that without believing that, or without asking for God's guidance? Mm-hmm. And he does constantly.
Hmm. Okay, and it's 2016committee.org for more information, correct?
Correct. 2016committee.org. That's where we are. That's how folks can contact us.
Bill Saraceno, thanks so much for joining us.
Hey, thank you, Jerry. My pleasure. Anytime.
All right. Bye-bye now.